So Suzanne is straight up Kansas City, and I'm a native New Yorker. But the longer I've been in Kansas City, I've been a little uneasy to hear my own D's dropping off, my A's flattening, like going to the plaza. At least I still say water. Well, joining us to explain a little more about what the Midwestern accent is Matt Gordon, linguistics professor at the University of Missouri. He joins us from Columbia over Skype. Thanks for being on KC Currents.
My pleasure. Happy to talk with you.
So, Matt, you're not from Missouri or Missouri, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm just up the road from Lincoln, Nebraska.
So I always thought, rather sadly, that accents are disappearing, that what we hear in movies and TV and the internet and all the travel and makes us more homogenized. But apparently that's not true.
It's true that there are some very highly localized speech patterns of such things spoken off the in islands off the East Coast, that sort of thing, that have sort of been toned down over the years. But at the same time, there's, English is always changing, like all living languages, it's always changing. So new things develop, like the many of the features that were discussed in the piece that played previously. So there's always new things coming up these tend to pattern on regional basis. So even though some features will die out, new ones come up and replace them, and they still sort of show these regional patterns.
So they still are regional. They're not just defined by other ways that people sort of define themselves, what music they listen to or technology or something like that.
Yeah, those sort of cultural things tend to influence what linguists tend to think of as more superficial levels. Your vocabulary, you might use a slang term that's kind of cool for a few years or something like that. The kinds of things that we're talking about are really more fundamental. They're things that are established when you're first learning your language as a child. So those sorts of things like the vowel differences and patterns of that sort are less likely to be influenced by what comes up later in life.
Huh. And so a lot of it does have to do with the position of your tongue in your mouth. Is that right?
Well, in English, maybe especially in American English, the regional differences tend to pattern according to vowels. And so vowels are different in terms of tongue position. That's one way of thinking about them. So it's not so much that there's something special about tongue position. It's just that because English varies in terms of vowels, or the vowel differences are the ones that we tend to notice more, that those have to do with tongue position.
And how does the Kansas City accent reflect the rest of the region, Missouri and the larger Midwest?
Yeah. Kansas City is kind of an interesting position. I mean, geographically, of course, it shares boundaries with the traditional Western dialect, and then also it's in this Midland region, so that's separate from the North, places like Minnesota and Chicago and so forth. But what's also interesting, it's close enough to the South that there are still aspects of Southern speech that stretch far north into the Kansas City area. So it's really a kind of hybrid of different features sort of picked up from all the surrounding broader regions.
And you look at you've been looking at Missouri specifically recently, right?
Yes, that's what I've been focused my research on.
What are you looking at and asking about the Missouri dialect or accent?
Yeah, some of the things that I've been particularly interested in are how some of these changes in pronunciation, how they spread, across the state, but also how they spread within social groups and that sort of thing. So some of the particular features that were mentioned before, the caught merger, which I have in my own speech, I'm sure they're distinct for you.
Yes, they are. Most of those pairs were distinct for me.
Yeah.
Not that I feel superior or anything.
so that pattern, along with something like the pen-pin merger, these kinds of things, which are, I think are really interesting, in part because they're very widespread. They're recent to this part of the country. They've arrived fairly recently, so you can find interesting generational differences. But another thing that makes them really interesting to linguists is they do tend to spread without anyone noticing. So and those are the kinds of things that are really cool, because you can't really say, oh, well, they're trying to copy this figure or someone else and talk like that. They're really spreading below the level of social awareness, which is always interesting.
Yeah, and then when you become aware of it, and I think that that's what was so fascinating about Suzanne's piece and our conversation. The grad student featured in Suzanne's piece, Christopher Schrelle, you've worked with him, right?
That's right. Yes, he's in our program.
And he studied white Kansasians from two different generations. Now, is there a distinct accent for black Kansasians or other groups?
African American speech has been studied widely, but not so much. I don't know of any particular studies in the Kansas City area. So there will be aspects of African American speech in Kansas City that are shared, you know, with other speakers. And there will probably be some other features that are shared more broadly across the country with African Americans. But honestly, there's been no in-depth research done in Kansas City.
Huh. Well, Kansas City, we want to hear from you. Do you think we have an accent or regional dialect? Give us some examples at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at kcurrents@kcur.org. Want to bring Josh Katz into the conversation. He's a PhD student in statistics at North Carolina State University and an intern in the New York Times graphics department. Thanks for joining us, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
You may have seen this quiz Josh created for the newspaper where you answer a bunch of questions about how you pronounce things, and then the quiz tells you where you're probably from. And it was kind of remarkably accurate, I think, for a lot of people. Josh, how did you come up with that idea?
Well, I mean, so one thing I should say first is that, and this is a very common misconception about the quiz, is that it's actually not intended to predict where you're from. It's really intended just to tell you, it describes the extent to which the way you talk overlaps with different areas of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the really cool things about it is that in practice, what often happens is it does come back as showing where someone's from. And
yeah, I got New York City, Albany, or Boston. And Suzanne, who we just heard from, got KC, Olathe, or Springfield. And I think it's funny because on the surface, I kind of think we sound pretty similar. But how does it work?
Well, I mean, really what it's doing, so it asks you these 25 different questions. And with some people, it's very easy. So especially Northeastern cities, I'm from outside Philadelphia. I say Hoagie and Mischief Night, and it knows right away, okay, this person grew up outside Philadelphia. But with somewhere like Kansas City, for example, there's not really one answer that right away very readily identifies them as from Kansas City. So it's in asking several of these questions, eventually you get enough information to be able to narrow it down.
And what were some of the questions on your quiz that narrowed things down for this region, Kansas City?
I mean, one of the things is, and we've talked about it several times already in the show, is that caught merger.
Yep.
you know, for example, in Kansas City, about 80% of people display this caught merger, whereas in St. Louis, about 80% of people do not. And so right away, you can kind of differentiate those two places, which are very close geographically, but have a lot of differences linguistically.
Now, Matt, how do accents form? I wonder, is it the ethnic groups that settled in a certain area that kind of originate those different vowels?
I think those early settlement patterns certainly do sort of set the stage for some of those differences. But, you know, when we're 150 years since the settlement, you know, of most of Missouri, it's hard to go back and think about those patterns. But some of those patterns do persist over time. I think that the important thing just in general about accent patterns here is that remember that, you know, the way that we speak is a strong marker of our identity. It's a way that we sort of project to the world who we are, where we come from, that sort of thing. And so that helps us understand why patterns that, you know, maybe people recognize as not standard, or maybe they seem a little embarrassed by them, they might still want to preserve them. So you probably know lots of New Yorkers who proudly, you know, if they wanted to, they could learn to speak like Midwesterners and pronounce their R's and say caught and caught the same and those sorts of things. But they want to project that they're New Yorkers. And the same thing even more so probably for Southerners, right? So the fact that the way we speak is such a crucial part of our identity, helps us understand why accent patterns come up and also how they continue to, you know, sort of reinvent themselves, right? Because we need to find new ways of expressing who we are. In the case of teenagers, want to distinguish their speech from the speech of their parents and so forth. So it's a never-ending process.
Interesting. You're listening to Casey Kearns on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We're talking about regional accents and dialects with our guests, University of Missouri Linguistics Professor Matt Gordon and Josh Katz, who I'm sorry is not an intern but currently with the graphics department at the New York Times. And we've got a bunch of phone calls here. Grace in Shawnee, but originally from New Jersey. What have you noticed here in Kansas City, Grace?
Well, I moved here about 7 years ago, and there are four things that I noticed. One is the word dang is used by young and old alike, and I never heard that in New Jersey.
I didn't in the East Coast either. What else?
Yeah. Another thing is the word ornery is used a lot here, and I never heard that on the East Coast either.
You know, same here. I didn't even know what that meant when I moved here.
Exactly. And then there's this, it's hard to explain, but if you're having a conversation with someone, you say, okay, thank you. They might say, or something like that after. I don't know what that is. It's like almost like, and that's not used either on the East Coast.
Interesting. And what's the fourth?
The fourth is the highway thing where they say Highway 7 or K7. We don't use that. And also they refer to themselves as from Kansas City when, people who live in Shawnee might say I'm from Kansas City, but we live really far outside of it. I would have never said that I'm from New York City, even though I live the same distance from Manhattan when I lived there.
Interesting. Well, that's, I think maybe that gets to some geographic identity, but I wonder if Matt has any comments about some of those things that Grace has noticed here in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think, I hadn't thought about that. As a Midwesterner myself, I wouldn't have really necessarily noticed things like dang and ornery, which sound perfectly normal to me. As far as the example of, you know, when you interact with someone and sort of politeness conventions, those are often the subject of conversation. People notice those, and they do tend to be regional in a sense. I don't know about the particular case here, but people are often commenting on how someone will say, you bump into someone accidentally and you say, excuse me, and they say, oh, you're good, or something like that. And for some people who aren't used to that, maybe it drives them crazy. But for other people, it's just a normal thing. So these things often get commented on. It's interesting that you notice them as you move from one part of the country to another.
Is that a Midwestern thing to say, oh, you're good, or is that from another region?
You know, I don't know that it's been studied particularly. I think it's probably more generational. So it might be something that's come up in recent years. Sort of a similar sort of thing would be the use of you guys as a plural marker there, which I've been told by college students here who maybe they work at a restaurant and they address a older couple as you guys. And, you know, the woman in the couple was really offended because she didn't think of herself as a guy. Well, guy has become kind of gender neutral in this usage, but not so much for older people.
Funny, Josh, that was the headline for that graphic that you created. You guys, yous, and y'all, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I have to thank my co-author, Wilson Andrews, for that one. That was all him.
What were some of the other things that really stood out to you in terms of being those markers for other parts of the country?
I mean, there were some funny things like the night before Halloween in Michigan is Devil's Night, and in South Jersey and around Philadelphia, it's Mischief Night. Huh. And for most people, they don't have a name for it at all and think we're all just really strange. There's things like in the Deep South, what I call sun shower, which is when it's raining and sunny outside. A good proportion of people in the Deep South will refer to that as the devil beating his wife, which I found
interesting.
Interesting, but
yeah, and the funny thing is, some of those you just have never heard of in another region of the country. I mean, some things we all kind of know, forget about it, but other things, it's like if you haven't been there, you just haven't heard it.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that I should say is all of this really started with the Harvard Dialect Survey, which was this linguistics project that was done a little over 10 years ago by Bert Vox and Scott Golder, where they went around and they put it online and collected about 50,000 survey responses on these 122 different questions. And that was really the impetus behind this whole project.
We have a call here from Bradley in Lawrence. Hi, Bradley.
Good morning. I have a question about the loss of diphthongs. I'm wondering whether it's a generational thing or geographical thing, whether it's actually on the rise, as it seems to me. I'm going to have to exaggerate here, but I call lunch a meal. And I hear, it seems to me, especially young people saying mill, like M-I-L-L. I hear it with real quite a lot. I hear real. And I'm wondering if this really is sort of on the ascendance and if it's generational or geographical. I'm just curious about it.
Matt, what is that?
Yeah, well, that's a nice example of a pattern that was touched on in the setup piece. There's lots of traditional differences between vowels that occur before the L sound. Steel versus still, meal versus mill, that sort of thing. And in the piece, they talked about bull versus bowl, those sorts of things. So the L sound has a kind of peculiar effect on vowels. It sort of creeps into the vowel sound and often makes it difficult to distinguish what's being heard there. So across English, across other languages as well, vowels often behave a little funny before an L sound. In English, this plays out in that a lot of these distinctions between the E and the I vowel, the A and the E vowel, and so forth, before an L sound, they merge together, the distinctions lost. So that particular example, I don't know that it's very common, at least in Missouri. Maybe it's more common further west in Kansas. It's also almost a stereotype of Pittsburgh speech. So that's one of the, if you want to pretend you're from Pittsburgh, you say you root for the Stillers instead of the Steelers.
What about dropping G's? I mean, I guess I associate that most with the South, but also with the Midwest, right?
Yeah. The saying fishing instead of fishing, that sort of thing. That's an interesting one because it's a pattern that's been in English for hundreds of years. And it's actually found in every dialect of English around the world. So it's not regionally restricted to any particular area. In American English, it's perhaps more common in some regions than others. It tends to be patterned more, though, in terms of social class and social background in that way. So the studies that have been done, for example, in New York City, found that it's much more common among working class people than among middle class people, that sort of thing. But what's really important is that it's done by everyone, but it tends to vary according to situation. So if you're speaking casually with your friends, you're more likely to say reading instead of reading or something like that. But if you're under pressure or you're in a more formal situation, you might pronounce the G in that context.
We have Barbara on the line here from Prairie Village. What have you noticed, Barbara?
Hi. My husband was born and raised in New York, and I in Kansas. And what he always brought to my attention, he worked in radio, and he'd gotten the more standard English, but he always made fun of me because I say M-A-R-Y, M-E-R-R-Y, and M-A-R-R-Y is exactly the same, and Barry, Barry, and Barry the same. E-R-R-Y, A-R-R-Y, and B-U-R-Y are exactly the same sounds for me, and they're not for him.
Josh, was that on? That was on your quiz, or some similar words were on the quiz that was on the New York Times site, right?
Yeah, it was. It's the Mary, 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 those three words, whether you pronounce them similarly or more different. I pronounce all three distinctly, but for most people, there's some overlap in the different vowels.
For most parts of the country.
That's right.
Were there some areas where people are more distinct about that?
Well, I mean, again, so especially around Philadelphia and South Jersey, you'll see there's that all three are distinct. And a lot of the questions with the quiz, as you may have noticed, a lot of the questions are more towards lexical variation, so vocabulary differences, mm-hmm. like whether you would say, you know, soda pop or Coke or hoagie or sub. And the reason for that is because, and you had mentioned this in the piece earlier, is that a lot of times people have difficulty actually realizing when they are displaying these vowel mergers, that there's that they think they're distinct in their minds, but when they're speaking them, they actually sound the same.
Well, Kansas City, we want to know, what are your most distinctive language characteristics? Do they reflect where you're from, whether that's Kansas City or some other part of the country or world? Call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KC Currents. Cindy is here, Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy. What's your question?
I'm wondering if you have taken into consideration when the use of pacifiers started, because they have developed different muscles in their tongue, and speech pathologists have worked with preschool kids because they can't pronounce their R's and some other letters.
Interesting. Matt Gordon, have you seen any research about the use of pacifiers on the development of accents?
No, I don't. I don't know about that. And I would be surprised that it pattern in terms of the kinds of accent differences we're talking about. But that's an interesting area to think about.
Hmm. Well, now, Josh, did you find, are people self-righteous about language, about the way they say things? I mean, just in responses to the quiz that you developed?
I don't know if they would be self-righteous, sort of saying, oh, this is the way it's meant to be. But people tend to be very proud of the way that they speak or the terms that they use because, as we were saying, it's that marker of identity. It's saying, oh, this is, it's really who I am, where I come from. So people are very proud of things like that. Although people would get, you know, the quiz isn't always accurate. So when it would pinpoint someone from somewhere very far away from where they were from, they would get a little bit upset about that.
Huh. I know somebody took it who was from Europe, and spoke English and I think moved here when they were 12 that got Anchorage, Alaska, which I think is an interesting thing to come up when you didn't actually grow up speaking English.
Yeah, that was one thing. When people from who speak, who are from Britain or New Zealand or Australia, if they take the quiz, it'll come back with just kind of ridiculous results. It's very much U.S. focused.
We got an email from Greg in Waldo who asked about combining words. He says, it seems like some African Americans in Kansas City pronounce it as a three-syllable word, Kansas City. Is the combination of words like ginormous a linguistic thing? Matt, how about that? It seems like those might be different things. One is more pronunciation, one is more a kind of language thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think saying something like Kansas City, I wouldn't expect that to be restricted to African Americans by any means. Sort of just a normal fast speech phenomenon. We tend to drop unstressed syllables, reduce them in quality. As for the ginormous thing, that's another trend, what linguists call blending of words. It's something that's developed fairly recently in the history of English, a couple hundred years or so. And it's also, it's kind of fun. I think people enjoy creating new words that way. It's very popular.
We have some questions about generational things. Sally in Lawrence. Hi, Sally.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have an observation about people who make declarative statements and they end all their sentences like it's they're asking a question.
Yes.
Sort of like that. And I've been noticing that more and more, and I first noticed it sort of when the whole Valley Girl thing started happening, and now I'm hearing it everywhere, mostly in young people, but not always. And I was wondering if how much television and the movies can have an effect on speech patterns like this.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, that particular phenomenon, it's technically called high rising terminal, or more popularly called uptalk. That has been around for a couple of decades at least. And it is definitely associated with young people. I don't know of a whole lot of empirical studies that have, sort of tested that. But I think your impression is certainly right on that. It's probably more common among young people. It often gets lumped together with the use of like, which is another word that people often talk about in these kinds of conversations. As far as it being spread by popular culture, that's a little more debatable. Certainly some things could become popularized, but that tends to be more about vocabulary choices. A particular word or maybe a particular catchphrase will catch on from Saturday Night Live or something like that. Something like this, which is a little bit more widespread, I would be hesitant to suggest that it's coming from TV and popular culture, although TV and popular culture certainly reinforce our perceptions of it. So, it may not have been started that way. Teenagers may not have picked it up from that, but it does kind of get played out in those contexts.
Now, how do people – you said that this language, some of the ways that you hold your tongue are formed early on in life. But I don't know if other people have noticed their accent shifting as they've lived in another place for a long time. I wonder how that happens.
Yeah, there have been a good number of studies of this sort of thing when people move from one part of the country to another, or from America to the UK or something like that. And there are certain things that are pretty easily adapted to the new context, and there are other things that are a little tougher to get to. So if you were if someone who has this caught merger, for example, were to move to New York City or someplace where they're clearly distinct, it would be very difficult to teach yourself to distinguish those vowels. So once the sounds have come together, it's very hard to distinguish them, to split them apart. You could kind of memorize particular words, and you might learn to say coffee instead of coffee, but you wouldn't have the broader pattern.
So there are certain aspects to our language, and maybe those that we are less conscious.
Yeah, that certainly plays a role in this case, yeah.
We have a comment here from Steve in Independence. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
What is the difference between here and Oklahoma, you are going to point out?
Well, my wife is from Venezuela, and she just started taking some courses on how to speak better English. And I was just telling her the other day, she's fortunate that she's learning this in Missouri. To me, where I felt more, plain English to me compared to Oklahoma. When I talked to my sister on the phone from Oklahoma City, I noticed a draw in her voice, and I think it's grown since I've been away from there for almost 25 years now. I don't know how much I have left of that, but I think hers has gotten stronger over the years.
Interesting. Well, Matt, has there been a shift in Oklahoma, do you think, or has Steve just been away from it for a long time?
I think that the Oklahoma definitely has more of those southern features. There have been some of these changes that we've talked about actually apply in Oklahoma as well, the caught merger and so forth. But as far as some of those more distinctly southern things expanding, I'm not really sure they've grown. There has been some grammatical differences, the growth of fixin' to, that sort of thing. I'm fixin' to go to the store. Those sorts of things have been on the increase in Oklahoma for sure.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Matt Gordon is the linguistics professor at the University of Missouri. Thank you for being on Casey Currents.
No, it's a pleasure.
And Josh Katz works in the New York Times graphics department. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.